Record 31. The Great Operation. I have forgiven everything. A train wreck. Saved! At the very last moment, when it already seemed there was nothing to grab at, when it seemed everything was already over, it was as if you'd already climbed the steps up to the benefactor's terrible machine and the bell glass had already come down over you with a heavy clank, and for the last time in your life you looked around, hurry, to swallow the blue sky with your eyes. And suddenly, it was only a dream. The sun is pink and happy, and the wall, what a pleasure to run your hand over the cold wall and the pillow. And you can't get enough of looking at the dent your head has made in the white pillow. That will give you at least some idea of what I felt this morning when I read the State Gazette. I'd had a terrifying dream and it was over. And I'd had so little courage, so little faith, I was even thinking of taking my own life. I'm ashamed now to read the last lines that I wrote yesterday, but it doesn't matter. Let them be, let them stand as a reminder of that incredible thing that might have happened and that now will not happen. That's right, will not happen. Here's the headline that glowed from page one of the State Gazette. Rejoice, for henceforth you are perfect. Up until this day, your offspring, the machines, were more perfect than you. In what way? Every spark of the dynamo is a spark of purest reason. Every stroke of the piston is an immaculate synergism. But do you not also contain this same infallible reason? The philosophy of the cranes, the presses and the pumps is as perfect and clear as a circle drawn with a compass. But is your philosophy any less perfect? The beauty of the mechanism is in the precise and invariable rhythm, like that of the pendulum. But you, sustained as you were from infancy on the Taylorian system, are you any less pendulum perfect? But think of this, the mechanism has no imagination. When you were at work, did you ever happen to see a distant idiotic, dreamy smile spread across the physiognomy of the cylindrical pump? At night, during the hours designated for rest, did you ever happen to hear the cranes toss relentlessly and heave sighs? No? But, and you should be ashamed of yourselves, the guardians more and more frequently note that you yourselves smile and sigh in just this way. And, cover your eyes for very shame, the historians of one state are seeking to resign rather than record certain shameful events. But you are not to blame. You are sick. The name of your illness is imagination. This is the worm that eats out black wrinkles on the brow. This is the fever that drives you to run farther and farther, even though that farther began in the place where happiness ends. This is the last barrier on the path to happiness. But rejoice, it has already been demolished. The path is free. The latest discovery of state science, the imagination is centred in a wretched little brain node in the region of the pons veroli. Expose this node to 3 doses of X-rays and you are cured of imagination. Forever. You are perfect. You are the equal of the machine. The path to 100% happiness is free. Hurry, then, all of you, young and old, hurry to undergo the great operation. Hurry to the auditoriums where the great operation is performed. Long live the great operation. Long live one state. Long live the benefactor. You, if you had only read all this, not in my notes, which are like some ancient whimsical novel. If your trembling hands held, as mine do now, this sheet of newspaper, still smelling of fresh ink, if you only knew, as I do, that this is all the most genuine reality, if not of today, then of tomorrow, wouldn't you feel exactly what I feel? Wouldn't your head spin the way mine does now? Wouldn't you feel this prickling, scary, sweet, icy along your arms and down your back? Wouldn't you also think you're a giant, an atlas, and that if you stood up straight, you'd be sure to hit your head against the glass ceiling? I grabbed the telephone. I-330, yes, I said 330, then choking. Oh good, you're home. Did you read? You're reading it. Isn't that? It's astonishing. Yes. Long, dark silence. I could barely hear a low sound in the receiver. She was thinking something over. I've got to see you today without fail. Yes, at my place, after 1600 hours, without fail. The daring, the darling, my precious, precious darling. Without fail, I felt myself smiling and I couldn't help it. So now I was going to carry this smile through the streets like a torch high over my head. Once outside, the wind hit me. It was twisting, whistling, cutting, but it made me even happier. Go on, howl. You won't knock over any walls now. Overhead, cast iron grey clouds were tearing along. Go to it. You can't dim the sun. We've fastened it to the zenith with a chain forever. We Joshuas, son of Nun. At the corner was a dense little group of Joshuas standing with their foreheads pressed against the glass wall. Inside, one was already lying on a blindingly white table. The soles of his bare feet could be seen sticking out at the yellow angle from beneath the white. White medics were bending over his head. A white hand was passing to another hand, a syringe filled with something. And you? How come you aren't going? I asked no one in particular, or rather all of them. And how about you? Someone's globular head turned to me. I'm going later. First I've got to... I left, slightly embarrassed. I really did have to see I-330 first. But why first? I couldn't answer this. The hangar, the integral, pale icy blue, shone and sparkled. In the engine compartment, the dynamo hummed. It lovingly repeated one and the same word over and over. Some word of mine, I felt. Bending over, I stroked the long, cold tube of the engine. Darling, what a precious darling. Tomorrow you will come to life. Tomorrow, for the first time in your life, you will shudder from the fiery, burning flashes in your womb. How might I have looked upon this mighty glass monster if everything had remained as it was yesterday? If I knew that tomorrow at 1200 hours I would betray it, yes, betray it. I felt a careful touch on my elbow from behind. I turned around, the second builder's flat platter on a face, of a face. You know, of course, he said. What? The operation. Yes, how about that? How about the way everything all at once? No, not that. The test flight's been postponed until the day after tomorrow, all because of that operation. We knocked ourselves out of nothing. All because of the operation. What a funny, limited person. He can't see over the edge of his platter. If only he knew that, except for this operation, he'd be locked in a glass cage tomorrow at 1200, thrashing about and climbing the walls. It's 15:30 and I'm back in my room. I came in and saw you. She was sitting at my table looking like a figure of ivory, hard and straight, her right cheek propped in her hand. She must have been waiting for a long time, since when she jumped up to meet me, her fingers left five creases in her cheek. For 1 second, the most unfortunate morning flashed before backed back at me. When we were here in the same spot next to the table, she next to I-330, in a rage, but only for a second. it was instantly wiped away by today's sunshine. That's how it is if you walk into a room on a bright day and flip on the light switch absent-mindedly. The light bulb does in fact come on, but it might as well not be there. It's so silly, weak, useless. Without thinking about it, I struck out my hand. I was forgiving everything. She grabbed both my hands in a firm, prickly grip while her sagging cheeks, like ancient ornaments, quivered with excitement. I've been waiting, only I came in for a minute. I just wanted to tell you how happy I am, how glad I am for you. Tomorrow or the day after, you know, you'll be completely well. You'll be born all over again. I saw a sheet of paper on the table, the last two pages of my notes from yesterday. They lay exactly where I had left them last night. If she saw what I wrote there, but what a difference did it make? That was only history now. It was now so far away, it was funny, like something seen through the wrong end of the binoculars. Yes, I said, and do you know what? Just now I was walking along the avenue and there was a man in front of me and he cast a shadow on the sidewalk and the shadow, see, was glowing and I think, no, I'm absolutely sure of it, that tomorrow there won't be any shadows, not from people, not from things. The sun will be right through everything. She was gentle but strict. You are imagining things. I wouldn't allow my children at school to talk that way. And she went on talking about the children, about how she'd taken them all in a bunch to the operation, and about how they'd had to tie them down, and about how you had to love without mercy, and about how she would finally make up her mind to. She smoothed out the grey-blue fabric between her knees, quickly plastered me with her smile, and, without saying anything more, left. And, fortunately, the sun did not stand still today, but went running on, and now it was already 1600 hours, and I was knocking on the door, and my heart was knocking inside me. Come in? I dropped onto the floor beside her chair, put my arms around her legs, throw my head back and look into her eyes, first into one and then into the other, to see myself in each, myself in wonderful captivity. There on the other side of the wall was a storm. There the clouds looked more and more like cast iron. But so what? Inside my head things were crowded, boisterous words were spilling over, and I was noisily flying somewhere, like the sun. No, wait, not somewhere. Now we know where, and the planets were flying behind me, planets spurting flame, and people with fiery singing flowers, and mute blue planets where the rational stones are organized into societies, planets that, like our Earth, have reached the apex of absolute 100% happiness. Suddenly, a voice from above. But don't you think that apex is nothing more than stones united into an organised society? And as the triangle got sharper and darker, and happiness, what is it after all? Desires are a torment, aren't they? And it's clear that happiness is when there are no longer any desires, not even one. What a mistake. What a stupid prejudice it's been all these years to put a plus sign in front of happiness. Absolute happiness should, of course, have a minus sign, a divine minus. I remember muttering distractedly, absolute minus is 273 degrees. Minus 273 degrees. Exactly. Rather cool, but doesn't that alone prove that we're at the apex? She was somehow talking to me, through me, the same as she did that other time long ago and spinning out my thoughts to the end. But there was something so eerie in this that I couldn't stand it, and with a great effort I forced out the word, no. No, I said. You're joking. She started to laugh, very loud, too loud. She laughed until, an instant later, she'd reached some kind of edge from which she stepped back and down. There was a pause. She stood up. She put her hands on my shoulders. She gave me a long, slow stare. Then she drew me to her, and everything vanished except for her sharp, burning lips. Farewell. This word came from far away above me and was a long time coming, a minute, maybe two. What do you mean, farewell? You were sick. You've committed crimes on account of me. It was a torment for you, wasn't it? But now comes the operation and you'll be cured of me. So, farewell. No, I began to shout, a mercilessly sharp triangle, black on white. What is this? Don't you desire happiness? My head was going in all directions. Two logical trains had crashed, piling on top of each other, crumpling, flying apart. Well, how about it? I'm waiting. Choose the operation and 100% happiness, or I can't live without you. I don't want to live without you. I either said or thought, I don't know which, but I-330 heard me. Yes, I know, she answered. Then, with her hands still on my shoulders and her eyes still looking into mine, in that case, I'll see you tomorrow. Tomorrow at 1200. You remember? No, it's been postponed one day. The day after tomorrow. So much the better for us. At 1200 the day after tomorrow. I was walking alone down the street in twilight. The wind was twisting, carrying driving me like a scrap of paper. Fragments of the cast iron sky were flying. They had another day or two to fly through the infinite. I was brushing against the yunnies of those walking the other way, but I was all alone. I could see it clearly. All were saved, but there was no saving me. Not any longer. I did not want to be saved. Record 32. I do not believe. Tractors. The human chip. Do you believe that you will die? Yes, man is mortal. I am a man. Ergo, no, this isn't what I mean. I know that you know that. What I'm asking is, have you ever actually believed it? Believed it completely? Believed not with your mind, but with your body? Actually felt that one day the fingers now holding this very piece of paper will be yellow and icy? No, of course you don't believe it, which is the reason why, up to now, you haven't jumped from the 10th floor to the pavement while you've gone on eating, turning pages, shaving, smiling, writing. It's the same, yes, exactly the same with me today. I know that this little black hand on my watch is going to creep down to here, midnight, and that it will then climb slowly back upward to cross at a certain moment some final point at which time an incredible tomorrow will commence. This I know, but I somehow do not believe it. Or maybe it seems to me that the 24 hours are going to be 24 years, and that is why I can still do something, hurry somewhere, answer questions, climb up the ladder to the integral. I can still feel it rocking on the water and understand that I have to hold on to the handrail and that it's cold glass I feel under my hand. I see the transparent living cranes bending their goose necks, sticking out their beaks and carefully, tenderly feeding the integral the terrible explosive food for its engines. And down below on the river, I have a clear view of the blue watery veins and nodules inflated by the wind. But even so, all this is very separate from me, strange, flat, like a diagram on a sheet of paper. And it's also strange that the flat diagrammatic face of the second builder is suddenly talking. So, what do you say? How much fuel shall we take on for the engines? If you count three, or say 3.5 hours, before me, in three-dimensional projection, On the diagram, I see my hand, which is holding a calculator, the logarithmic dial on which points to the number 15. 15 tons? No, better make that... Yes, make it 100. This is because I do, after all, know that tomorrow... And out the corner of my eye, I see my hand, the same, the one holding the dial, begin almost imperceivably to tremble. 100? But why such a lot? That's enough for a week. What am I saying? For much longer than a week. There's no telling. Who knows? I know. The wind whistles and all the air right up to the sky seems tightly packed with some invisible substance. I have trouble breathing, trouble walking and down there at the end of the avenue, the hand on the clock of the accumulator tower has trouble slowly crawling along, never stopping for a second. The spire of the tower, dim and blue, is into the clouds where it howls vacantly as it sucks electricity. The pipes of the musical factory are howling. In rows, four across, same as always, but the rows seem to be unstable, somehow, maybe from the wind, that's shaking and twisting them. More and more now, they've bumped against everything on the corner, recoiled, and now they're a dense, frozen, tight clot, breathing hard and all craning their necks at once. Look! No, look there! Hurry! Them! It's them! Me! Never! Not for anything! Stick my head in the machine first? Shut up! You're crazy! The door of the auditorium at the corner is wide open, and out of it is coming a slow, heavy column of about 50 men, or rather not men. That isn't the word. Those weren't feet, but some kind of heavy forged wheels drawn by some invisible drive mechanism. Not men, but some kind of tractors in human form. Above their heads, snapping in the breeze, was a white banner embroidered with a golden sun, in the rays of which was a device. We are the first. We have already had the operation. Everybody follow us. They were ploughing through the crowd, slowly but irresistibly, and you could see that if there was a wall or a tree or a house in their way instead of us, they would plough right through the wall, tree, house, without stopping. Now they're already in the middle of the avenue. Now they're stretched out into a chain, hand in hand, facing us. And we, a tense little clot of bristling heads, we wait. We crane our necks. Clouds, whistling wind. Suddenly, the left and right wings of the chain quickly close in on us, faster and faster, like a heavy car running downhill, lock us into a ring, and toward the wide open doors, through the doors, inside. Someone's piercing scream. It's a roundup! Run for it! And there was a stampede. Right near the wall, there was still a narrow little breach in the living ring. Everybody headed that way, heads out, heads momentarily sharpened into wedges, with sharp elbows, ribs, shoulders, sides. They were like a stream of water compressed by a fireman's hose. They fanned out and scattered, stamping feet, swinging arms, and yonis all over the place. Out of somewhere, my eyes caught sight of a body, bent double like the letter S, with transparent ear wings. Then he was gone, sunk into the earth, and I was alone in the midst of flaming, flailing arms and feet. I ran for it. A stop for breath in some kind of entranceway, my back pressed up against the doors, and instantly, as if the wind was blowing it, a little sliver of humanity comes toward me. I've been behind you the whole time. I don't want it, see? I don't want it. I agree. Tiny round hands on my sleeve, round blue eyes. It's her. Oh. Then she sort of slips down the wall and settles on the ground. Then she bent over and made a small lump of herself on the cold stairs, and I, standing above her, caress her head. her face with my wet hands. This made me look very big and her very small, like a small part of myself. This was totally different from the way it was with I-330, and it occurred to me that it was something like the way the ancients treated their own personal children. I can hardly hear what she's saying down there, talking through the hands covering her face. Every night, I can't. If they cure me, every night, alone in the dark, I think about him, how he'll turn out, how I'll do for him. I wouldn't have anything to live for, see? You've got to. It was a stupid feeling, but I did in fact feel certain. Yes, I've got to. Stupid. Because what I had to do was one more crime. Stupid because white cannot be black at the same time. A duty can't also be a crime, or else there's nothing in life. That is black and white, and colour depends on some fundamental logical postulate. And if you start from the postulate that I gave her a child illegally. Okay, but just calm down, I say. You understand, I've got to take you to I-330, as I wanted to earlier, so that she can... Yes, this is a low voice, her hands still over her face. I helped her get up. Then, without saying a word, each thinking his own thoughts, or maybe each thinking about one and the same thing, we go along the darkening street among the quiet leaden houses through the wind's tense, whipping branches. At one transparent, tense point I heard behind me, through the whistling wind, the familiar sound of feet squelching through puddles. At the turn, I looked back through the upside-down reflection of the racing rain clouds in the dim glass pavement and saw S. Immediately, I start waving my arms in some strange, awkward way and telling to O that tomorrow, yes, tomorrow, the Integra will make its first test flight and that this will be something absolutely incredible, marvellous, terrifying. In her circular blue amazement, O looks at me, then looks at my loud, idiotically waving hands. But I don't let her get a word out. I go on walking and talking. But inside me, where only I can hear it, a separate feverish thought is humming and knocking. You can't somehow. You've got to. You can't let him follow you to I-330. Instead of heading left, I cut off to the right, the bridge, obediently presented its slavishly bend back to the three of us, me, O, and him, S, who was following. From the brightly lit buildings on the opposite bank, lights were sprinkling into water and shattering into thousands of feverishly leaping sparks, spattered with mad white foam. The wind was humming. It sounded like a bass string made of ship's hawser and strung somewhere low overhead, and through the bass all the time behind me. The building where I live, at the entrance, O stopped and started saying something like, "No, you promised." But I didn't let her finish, pushed her quickly through the door, and we were inside in the lobby. At the control desk, the familiar sagging cheeks shaking with excitement, a dense clot of numbers standing around and some argument in progress. Heads are sticking through the banisters of the second floor. People are running down the stairs, one at a time. But that would wait. For now, I hurried to take O to the opposite corner and sat down with my back to the wall. On the other side of the wall, I'd seen a dark, large-headed figure slipping back and forth along the sidewalk, and took out a pad of paper. O sank slowly into her chair as though her body under her yoni was melting, evaporating, leaving only an empty garment and empty eyes that absorbed you with their blue vacancy. Her tired voice said, Why'd you bring me here? You tricked me. No, shh, look, see there, on the other side of the wall. Yes, a shadow. He's already behind me. I can't. Look, I can't. I'm going to write a couple of words here, and you're going to take the note and leave alone. I know he'll stay here. Beneath the yoni, her burgeoning body shifted again. The belly grew slightly rounder. Her cheeks showed a barely perceptible morning light, a dawn. I stuck a note into her cold fingers, pressed her hand, and for the first time took a drink with my eyes from her blue eyes. Farewell. Perhaps there'll be another time. She drew back her hand, bent over. She slowly started off two more steps, turned round quickly, and was at my side again. Her lips moved, her eyes, her lips, all of her, telling me one and the same word over and over. What an unbearable smile. What pain. Then there was a human sliver hunched over in the entrance, a tiny shadow on the other side of the wall, never glancing back, moving more and more quickly. I went up to Yu's desk, puffing out her gills with alarm and outrage. She said, "Look, they're all crazy. That one swears he saw some kind of naked man covered all over with fur near the ancient house." A voice out of the tight little bunch, bristling with heads. "Yes, and I say it again, I saw him, I did. How'd you like that, huh? It's delirium." And this delirium of hers was so certain, so inflexible, that I asked myself, maybe it really is delirium, all that's been happening to me and around me in the last few days. But I glanced at my hairy hands, and words came back to me. "You probably have a drop of forest blood yourself. Maybe that's why my feeling for you is..." No, fortunately, it isn't delirium. No, unfortunately, it isn't delirium. This is Nick Treadwell, and you are listening to Nick Treadwell's Storyville.